The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Heritage Radio Network. It's been a long, hot summer in the city. Anthony Weiner has apparently decided to stay in the race for mayor of New York City, further demonstrating that he is, in fact, a sociopath. Elliot Spitzer is also remaining in the race for controller, but at least he's not continuing to get caught with prostitutes. San Diego Mayor Bob Filner just got out of a sexual harassment therapy after spending the summer in the news for sexually harassing his female employees and every other woman he came in contact with over the course of his career. Come on, politicians, get into therapy. Edie Gourmet died at the age of 84. The Washington Post was sold to Jeff Bezos, and President Obama went on The Tonight Show and criticized Russia for their treatment of gays and lesbians. How do you behave when you don't actually want peace talks to lead to peace? Israel started to sell 1,200 plots and settlements in East Jerusalem and gave preliminary approval for 800 new settlement homes in the West Bank, just as peace talks with the Palestinians began in Washington, D.C., How could anyone not be optimistic this time? A man in Florida, of course, Florida, killed his wife and posted a picture of her dead body on Facebook. I'm not really an expert on social media, but I think this guy might be beyond therapy. Let's discuss. I'm Brian Kaiser, and this is How to Behave, the therapy show. Hannah Howard, welcome back. We've been off for a couple of weeks again.
Thank you. I forget what this is, where I am, exactly. What's going on to speak.
You're in Brooklyn.
Okay.
We're talking about how to
it's
behave.
It's all coming back to me.
Have you been behaving well this summer?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good, good. There was a bachelorette party in your recent past?
There was indeed. It was fabulous.
We should do a whole show on bachelor and bachelorette parties, shouldn't we?
We should. I'm just learning the ways of this strange institution, and I'm not quite sure yet.
I'm going to my first bachelorette party in a few weeks.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's a lesbian bachelorette party, so I guess guys get invited.
There were guys invited to this
bachelorette party. Yeah?
Yeah, they were very gay guys, but...
Cool. So we're joined today by our regular summer guest, Jennifer Peterman.
Hi.
How's it going, Jennifer?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
It's great to see you.
Thank you.
So we are doing the therapy show today.
Yeah.
And it's August.
Yeah.
So all the shrinks are away. So we don't have any expert.
They're going to their summer homes that all of their clients pay for.
Exactly.
My therapist went to some kind of national psychiatric convention in Hawaii.
Oh, good. So they're relaxing and learning the new practicing at the same time.
Yeah. Well, so it's just us. We're gonna talk about therapy from the expert point of view of people in therapy, but not actual therapists.
No. Yeah. Your entire promo was based on every single person needs copious amounts of psychotherapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I wrote that based on current events. I didn't write it based on the theme of the show. Because as you know, I didn't know what the theme of the show was until about a half an hour ago.
I love that you said that Weiner is a sociopath. How do you figure
it out?
I just think he needs doses of therapy.
I looked it up. Okay. So according to dictionary.com, sociopath is a person with a psychopathic personality whose behavior is antisocial, often criminal, and who lacks a sense of moral responsibility or social conscience. So then I looked up psychopathy. A mental disorder in which an individual manifests amoral and antisocial behavior, lack of ability to love or establish meaningful personal relationships, extreme egocentricity, failure to learn from experience.
Ooh.
So here's a guy.
So maybe he's a psychopath. Well, I guess he could be both.
He might be a psychopath. He's definitely one or the other.
Can he be healed?
Well, I think that's between him and his therapist, not between him and all the residents of New York City. Have you guys been following the mayor's race?
A little bit, yeah.
Only because he's in the news all the time because of his sexting?
Yeah.
The thing that also just disappoints me is that he doesn't understand how to use Twitter correctly.
So that's why you're not going to vote for him?
Right. It's like, if you're going to be a sociopath, you can at least use the proper, for, you know, have his,
be
has
a competent
every,
one.
Every 12-year-old has Snapchat, but Anthony Weiner can't get it.
I haven't even heard of Snapchat.
It's the pictures that will disappear automatically.
Oh, yeah. I guess not.
No, I don't know what Snapchat is either.
No, you do. It's
it's something
some
else
of,
that's going to plummet me into despair that I don't know how to use.
It's an Instagram that self-destructs in a minute or 30 seconds or something.
Who sees it?
Whoever you send it to. But it's temporary, but and then all traces disappear.
The news media can't find it later. Is the
that's
point.
The plan. Yeah. It's or made for Anthony Weiner.
Weiner must be so pissed that he didn't figure that out.
Stupid
Snapchat Twitter.
I'd still be a congressman running for mayor. Oh, well. I'm a big believer in politicians' personal lives being not important for their public lives. Like, I will vote for people whose politics I believe in, even if I think they do some things that I'd be pissed off if I were their spouse. But if it is illegal or totally hypocritical, then it bothers me. So I felt like Weiner has every right in the world to run for mayor and let the people decide based on the merits until he got caught again doing this thing he said he had stopped doing and that he was in therapy for and lied to everybody about it.
But
again.
You can't just be in therapy for one issue for 3 to 6 weeks or whatever it was and then all of a sudden you're healed. It doesn't work that way.
Have you been watching the San Diego mayor thing?
No.
Bob Filner?
Oh, yeah, I saw
apparently.
Clint. Yeah, that's. That's
is too aggressive a hugger. That's his description of the problem. But apparently every woman who has ever crossed his path has come out and told like just skeevy stories about him grabbing their legs while he's sitting next to them and
so
rubbing
he's,
their
so,
cheeks.
So I saw him speak and he said, or he had some soundbite and he said, I will be going to, you know, psychotherapy too.
Yes.
To look at this issue. I'm like, you have to go deep.
He went to a 2-week program.
Oh, yeah, 2 weeks.
He's good now. Totally good.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know,
what if he still has those deep psychological issues, but he just stops being skeevy and touches the lady's legs that he's sitting next to? Is that okay or is that not okay?
I don't think psychiatry, therapy, processing feelings works that way at all.
I think there are two questions. One is, like, as a human being, is he okay? And the other is, is he allowed to remain as mayor, right?
Oh.
Which were you asking, Hannah? Like, is it okay? Can he still be mayor if he just stops doing it?
I guess he could be mayor and be skeevy. But I guess what are we, like, as a population expecting the psychotherapy to do? Like, change him or change his behavior?
I think as voters, we need him to change his behavior.
As a woman, I'd like him to change his behavior. I'm sure all of those women would like him to change his behavior. Because if he's going to remain in public office, be in a quote-unquote position of power, he's going to have to change his habits around women. Right?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But yeah, not in 2 weeks. He's not doing it. He's not doing that in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about therapy, Jen.
Okay.
You give a pretty good pitch for why therapy's good. So
universal, I think.
Tell our listeners.
I say universal therapy for all the time. Start now and don't stop.
Why?
And do not stop. Don't pass go. Because, you know, life is incredibly long and feelings change and growth patterns, habits change. And I look at it as a learning tool and facilitates my creativity and my growth and my enlightenment. I was fortunate to have really great therapists. So I'm an advocate for people acknowledging, accessing feelings. I think that is the crux of our education, personal education and creativity. I just think that's it.
Acknowledging and accessing feelings.
Feelings.
But is a therapist really the key to that?
Well, that's why, I mean, yes and no, depending on how one is going to define who their therapist is. My therapist is a psychiatrist who prescribes medication, mm-hmm. or my therapist is my priest, or my personal trainer, or my drug dealer, which I don't advocate at all. but you know, some people use their, you know, lots of copious amounts.
Right.
As you said, some people shrink is their drug dealer,
or they talk to their hairdresser. Or, I mean,
yeah,
I sometimes wonder if you could have somebody in whom you confide whether the label matters, if it's my mom or my bestie or my doll.
I used to think that therapy is for people who don't have friends, but now that I've been in therapy, I don't think that. I think that was narrow-minded of me, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is just having someone to talk to. It's better than nothing.
I guess your even your very good friends don't really want to hear about you nonstop for an hour.
They're also not really, they're trained to a point. Not trained isn't the word. They're willing to listen to a point, and then habits fold back in on each other. And you know, it's not about changing the habit. It's just you listening to your best friend bitch for 2 hours, and nothing processes from it. Nothing comes of it.
Yeah,
what do you got to look at?
Friends are a lot more likely to say, "Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. He was so mean to you."
Yeah, something.
Rather than get your shit together. Like, what is your problem?
Mm-hmm. Do you have a good therapist?
Who, me?
Yeah. Do we all say if we're in therapy, do we like our therapist?
I had a therapist that was great for me for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and then. I think I went for about three and a half years total. And then I felt like I was just using him as an audience to tell great stories to every week.
Oh.
I don't think...
Well, that's interesting.
I don't think I was using it... Like, I don't know that it was his fault. It's just that I wasn't using it for real growth.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, here's what happened with my week. So I felt like I need to make a change. So I stopped. And my plan is to find somebody new and go back. And he's also the only person I've ever seen. So I don't have a real broad view of, like, I can't compare him to anything else. I don't know if he's great or awful. He's the only therapist I've seen. So I think it'd be good for me to try somebody new and see how it's different.
Well, how do you feel when you, you come out of therapy? These are, you know.
I felt great for like 3 months out of therapy. I was like, oh, thank God I stopped doing that. I was in a rut. It was just a habit.
Right.
I wasn't using it to do anything good. I was just going in and talking for 50 minutes every week.
I don't even think we realize how insidious our habits actually are.
Yeah.
Which is why I, you know, sit with somebody once a week.
How old were you when you started?
Maybe 19 or 20. But I was looking at issues of like, God, I'm so... fear and insecurity drove every single choice that I made, and it wasn't working. I wasn't happy or awake at all. So I had to chip away.
And your therapist?
Well, she was also, like I said, a Buddhist nun, so I got to learn principles of meditation and quieting the mind and analyzing feelings.
How do you find a Buddhist nun therapist?
I just
want one.
I'm going to Google it right now and see what comes up.
Well, that's where I would say to people getting into therapy is do research on what kind of therapist are you going to, a Jungian, a Freudian, a Adlerian.
Okay, so what do you, I don't know what any of that means, except in the broadest sense.
I didn't know what it meant in the broadest sense either, but I only had...
The Freudian thinks everything is an Oedipus complex. The Jungian thinks everything is an archetype. That's about the extent of my knowledge. But then there's so many other schools. There's cognitive behavioral mm-hmm. therapy, and you sound like you know more than
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, I had a friend who told me about cognitive behavioral therapy and that she was in it and how awesome it was.
And what she did.
And I... Which, the idea is that it's about...
Changing your behavior. Right, in really concrete ways.
In concrete ways, right. Yeah. Like, here's a problem, let's fix it.
Right.
As opposed to therapy, which is about addressing your feelings and your underlying emotions and blah, 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 and letting that change your behavior, right?
I have a drama degree, so I'm big on the exercises and the breathing and the writing and, you know, that sort of analysis. I didn't sort of land on the one. The Buddhist nun was my favorite because she just chipped away. So anytime I would start to spin out, she would bring it back to where is it? Where is it in your breath? Where is it in your body? And, you know, sort of go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. When I mentioned cognitive behavioral therapy to my Freudian shrink, he got very defensive. I don't know if defensive is the word, but he did not like the idea of cognitive behavioral therapy. Like, it was an assault on everything that he studied.
What did he study?
Freud.
Hmm. But all therapy, I mean, Freud's like the daddy, right? So it's all stemming from there in one way or another. But I think they're all a little bit at war, right? So you have to...
Yeah, and I'm always suspicious of people who cling to any one dogma. So, like, that he wasn't even open-minded to talking about another theory kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Right, because there's like, clearly really good parts in all of these theories.
Right, or at least there could be, like, we should be open to.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So if you're looking for a Buddhist non-therapist, go to Google. There's no shortage of them.
There is so much self-help and, you know, books out there to help you find your way. I recommend Pema Chodron. I think she's outstanding. And
who is that? What's her story?
She's also a Buddhist nun.
She's from the Buddhist nun school.
Look up
therapy.
Pema Chodron. Look up Pema, P-E-M-A, Chodron. And her, you know, her books are legion, but she, her stuff is really accessible and beautiful and succinct. She's an advocate for simplifying and, you know, acknowledging very simple feelings. Compassion is key.
Yeah.
As long as I can walk out of the room and feel as if I've done the processing work, my mother's going to listen to this and she loves the psychobabble. as long as I've processed enough to feel better. I think it feels better to feel better. So as long as I've done the work to move forward, then I'm in a good place. It's worth the money.
Cool. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, the mayor in San Diego discusses his stop and frisk policy. This is How to Behave on heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Welcome back. This is How to Behave on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Brian Kaiser, here with Hannah Howard, as always, and Jennifer Peterman, as always in August.
Thank you. I have a steady gig next summer.
So before we get back into therapy, which is today's topic, I want to talk about somebody who might need therapy. Did you see this thing where a judge in Tennessee ordered a family whose child was named Messiah to change the child's name? Yes.
Right. Why? They don't have very much going on as a judge.
Right. This is yeah, this is activist judiciary in the extreme. But yeah, she said that there's only one true Messiah and his name is Jesus Christ. And so this family can't name their child Messiah.
So everybody that's named their child Jesus or Jesus?
That's what I said. Like, are the cops going to start
going out?
What
if your name's like Christian? Or
yeah, but like half of Latin America is named Jesus.
Yeah,
and
so what happened to this poor child?
I don't know. This just happened. So
how old is the child?
It's a baby.
15.
No. It's like, no, the baby was just born. They were actually, the mother and the father couldn't agree on what last name the child would have, and so they actually went to court to have a judge decide what the last name was. Mm-hmm. And in the process, the judge also said you can't use that first name.
And are they fighting this ruling?
It just happened.
I think we're becoming a little too judgmental.
Who, me or
no,
the judge?
We all, you know, the collective, a little too judgmental and wasting time on things like that. That's cruel.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's cruel.
And then it also turns out that in 2012, Messiah was one of the five fastest growing boys' names in the Social Security list of names. So this judge is telling these people they can't name their kids something that thousands and thousands of other people are naming their kids.
Why are people naming their kids Messiah? What does that mean?
What does it mean? What does it mean that they're naming them, or what does Messiah mean?
I mean that it's growing so fast, like maybe we're in such a sad and desperate times that we need the hope.
Maybe. I went to elementary school with a kid named Messiah.
I think that this is okay, because if celebrities are walking around naming their children after flatware and fruit, then I think that that's a beautiful thing. I'm upset by that, actually. I think it's really judgmental and cruel. But I have a thing with, like, you know, if you give someone an identity, then, you know, don't mess with that identity, the name being the first thing. So if this child wants to grow to become all the attributes of a Messiah, Godspeed. God, all the power to you.
Yeah.
I judge the judge.
Would he need therapy?
He's gonna. He's okay. I say, yes, go to therapy.
I know a friend of mine said they shouldn't be allowed to name him Messiah because he's going to get made fun of his whole life. What really bothered me most about this is the parents said they chose the name because it went well with their other two kids' names, which both start with M's. So it's just, you know, it sounds
Mason
good.
Mason and...
Right, right. It's like they think they just made up a word that sounds good. They don't actually know what it means. Really depressing.
That's frightening.
Okay, so, Hannah, you had a story of a therapist experience?
Yeah, because I had a great therapist in college, and when I came back to New York, I thought I'd look her up, but it turns out that she doesn't take my insurance and charges, like every other therapist in New York, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars to see her. So I went to ZocDoc to see my therapy options.
What is ZocDoc?
ZocDoc is your online doctor warehouse.
Really? I'm learning so much. What was the thing with Twitter to make my Twitters go away?
Snapchat
and ZocDoc. Okay,
yes,
I'm going to write
very
those down.
Valuable pieces of information. Right, and it's cool because you put in your insurance information and it can give you anyone who is part of that plan. So I found this therapist with rave reviews and he just looked like beloved by the ZocDoc populace. And I went to see him. And it took me a few sessions to understand that this was just his way. But at first, I just thought he was, like, very friendly because if I would say, oh, I'm going to visit my uncle, he would say, oh, I have an uncle. And then he would launch into a story about his own uncle. But then it just became, like, completely about him and completely unrelated to me. And the last session we had involved, like, him trying to figure out the best dress to purchase his girlfriend for a birthday present and showing me all the pictures of the potential dresses.
Did this person have credentials?
He was like a real doctor.
No, he was not.
Awesome.
Yeah. Did he have a diploma or some certificate?
He had a diploma
on his
from
wall?
Like an Ivy League school. Oh, he was totally legit. He wrote books about creativity and therapy.
Great.
Like, he sounded really respectful.
So why did you fall through the cracks when it's all about him?
It's like a sitcom.
I did help him choose the dress that I liked the best for his girlfriend.
Thank God you were there.
Did he pay you $2.50 an hour for that?
Right.
How much did you pay for this session?
Well, because it was covered by insurance, I think it was only like a $20 copay, but it was still a waste of my time.
God, how many times did you go?
Maybe 5 or 6.
Wow.
Yeah. That's...
I'm so angry.
Kind of for $20 a session, I might continue going just to see how ridiculous it gets, like how far it goes.
I wonder what would be next. I saw him at the gym a few weeks ago, and he did not remember me. So I said hi, and he gave me that look of like I have no idea who
he didn't
you are.
Like you because you weren't a very good listener.
I was a great listener.
We are putting our very fragile feelings in the hands of unqualified people.
But I'm amazed that you've managed. So after your Buddhist nun, you continued with a string of useful, great therapists.
Yes,
that's amazing.
I only had
and unusual.
Not only I was with Lynn for probably 10 plus years and then went into her community and found another woman that was training with her. So then moving on to Donna. I only had two really knocked down, drag out, amazing shrinks for therapy experiences. Yeah. And now back with another one that I do like. It just takes a matter of, you know, I'm going to use some psychobabble, but respecting myself to be in process with someone that's equipped, sitting across from me, asking the right questions so I can do my work. And I do work very hard all the time. My therapy, my writing, my work. So this is who I am.
Have you done group therapy?
Brian loves group therapy.
I was forced into group therapy. Yes, I did. It's that's not for me. I'm being diplomatic about
don't
it.
Don't be. Yeah,
it was group therapy is a very creepy.
30 minutes ago, you had a great story about group therapy, and now you're being all diplomatic.
I was in a program to see if I wanted to practice becoming a therapist myself. So there was tons of process, pages and work and reading and one-on-ones and groups, and you know the group therapy rattled me because you know, I've been in one-on-one therapy for so long, and then all of a sudden I'm exposed to a group situation, and it just changes the dynamic of how you relate and interact. And
I've never been in a group, so I don't know. Was everybody attacking each other?
There's a certain, you know, archetypes of the group. There's like the scapegoat. There's the drama. Like this one that creates the drama.
It's like a sitcom. It's like no matter what group you're in, it's perfect casting. Right? There's one in every role.
It's central casting. It was. Really, really uncomfortable. I guess I'm a narcissist in that way, and that I like my therapy to be about me. I like it to be about my work.
And this was a group made up of people who were training to become therapists.
Yeah, but we were
that
all...
just to me sounds like the greatest
it was not.
Hot mess it was... imaginable on the planet.
But, you know, in my like trying to find the compassion for all of it, we were all in it together. Just in a very messy state. So there's someone there that has to facilitate that messy state.
And what are the rules of how to behave in group therapy?
You have to listen. You have to breathe. You have to be present.
Acting class.
That's right. Well, acting classes. I don't know any, the phones are going to light up. I don't know any actor.
I doubt it.
I'd say it. Good. I'm glad no one's listening.
Nobody's listening live. Everybody listens as a podcast.
I don't know any new actor out there that doesn't use acting class as a form of psychotherapy. And my students are going to be, my students are probably like, I didn't. But
it's the same way as like taking writing classes with writing workshop. And then we all analyze each other.
Yes,
like it's
great.
The same bullshit.
Yeah,
it's
everybody uses whatever they have as therapy. Like we have all worked as waiters.
Oh, yeah.
People go into restaurants to get therapy. Yeah. Ordering chicken is a form of therapy.
Yeah.
Like, I was sitting in a restaurant today, and this woman at the table next to me, it was just a diner. Like, I'm having an omelet, and this woman next to me is trying to order eggs. And she had what must have been a 3-minute conversation with the waiter about the color of the eggs, that they had to be yellow, not brown.
Mm-hmm.
And the waiter, whose first language was not English, but who speaks English, but like he seemed very confused, and she just kept repeating, the eggs have to be yellow, not brown. Do you understand me? Tell the guy in the kitchen, not brown. And I was like, what issue is this really about? Mm-hmm. This isn't about the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was in therapy, she might be able to just order lunch and then get on with her life.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's an excellent practice of listening. My dear friend Devin is like, you know, we're human beings with feelings and we're in pain a lot of the time, and let's be kind, like meet somebody with kindness instead of attacking. I know that if I meet brown yolk egg lady, mm-hmm. that I'm equipped to, and you're equipped to understand that it's not so much about the brown yolks or the yellow yolks, it's something deeper, but you know, there's someone else out there that does not, it's not equipped.
You might be better equipped than I am.
Brian's equipped, but he doesn't really care.
I think being in service is the highest form of therapy.
It is.
A process, at least, because, you know, when I was a baby waitress, I used to take everything personal, and then all the work that I've done now, it's easier not to take things so personal. Sometimes it still sticks.
But it is true. When you deal with the public in any manner, you are dealing with people's emotional issues and their fears and their anxieties in whatever you do.
Yes, I think we're fear-based culture.
Yeah.
Post 9/11, and it's pervasive and icky, and people don't know how aren't equipped with the language of I'm scared now of the big changing world, and I don't know how to access people to help me through that fear. People don't want to access the process through the fears.
Do you think we weren't a fear-based society before 9/11?
I don't. Think so.
So you're not saying you think human beings are fear-based naturally. You think that we as a society reacted.
There is something particular about our culture that's just so hooked in. Like every news headline is like, mm-hmm. you might be dying of bed bugs. You mm-hmm. might, yeah. you know, I have the cousin who sends out the emails like 57 ways your child could die in the pool.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
oh, okay.
Yeah. We talked about that a little bit earlier, that there's a lot of forces in our society that, that benefit from us being scared. The mm-hmm. news is one of them. Mm-hmm. Republicans is another. they do. Like they
lack of exercise, a lot of nutrition.
A lot of politicians. A lot of politicians.
Oh my gosh, the whole nutrition thing, right? Like, don't yeah. eat that; it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We're not slowing down. I vehemently recommend the September issue of Esquire. That the how to chill the fuck out issue.
must read.
Meditate
that.
To sit down and take a deep breath and learn how to chill
yeah.
the fuck out.
All right. Well, we're going to have to end on that plug.
That's our work for the week.
Esquire. This was good, though. I even though I have only done it for a few years, I am a big proponent of therapy. I think everybody should do it at least some of the time. You think everybody should do it all the time, right, Jennifer Peterman?
I do.
Yeah.
I could talk, it's another show. I can talk about that. I'm saying, get thyself to some sort of therapy, please, because I have to wait on you.
That's right. Because I deal with the public, I want everybody to get into therapy. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. A big thanks to my guests today. My guest, Jennifer Peterman.
Thank you.
And my co-host, Hannah Howard.
Yay! Yay!
Who's no longer smoking hot. She's now vaping hot. The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lindbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at bigfivechord.com. Thanks to Dedrick Sarzaba for engineering today's show. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser, and please take my advice. Look out for bicycles when you cross the street. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.